So I'll say a few words about metta first, understanding that what we've been cultivating every day, once a day, and maybe more for you on your own, is that quality of loving kindness, which is really the simple and clear intention of goodwill. It's a quality of heart you can notice that can embrace life to the extent that it can be boundless, universal. And it has that specific quality of non-hostility. In fact, the Buddha didn't speak as a mental factor, didn't speak about cultivating metta at first. We can say that actually it's non-ill will. And the very fact that there's non-ill will already, there's basic goodness. And it's totally that quality of deep friendship with life and that attitude of non-contention, which we enable, and it's really a quality that is present in each one of us. So what the Buddha said is we're kind of rediscovering a quality that is here, that's present, and at times veiled by other visitors, which, you know, we know about by now, I think. One of them being aversion, right? So it's a wonderful quality, and some people say, you know, why is there practice for that? You know, I naturally have this outflow of generosity and kindness and goodwill that is present. Good for you. You know, there are people who very hopefully do not need to purify their mind or heart, and very clearly have this quality manifest in them and express. It's the expression of the heart, which holds a lot of goodwill naturally. Now, for some, this quality may be a little veiled, but in any case, it's present. And, you know, I often have this question that comes up, you know, what would it be to live in a world where there is the absence of hostility? You know, it's amazing. Wherever you look, you may see that maybe there are veils in people's mind or hearts. And so this quality of loving kindness is to care for the well-being of others in a way that is regardless whether we know them or don't know them. And that's really what is special about this kind of kindness or love. It's said that it's altruistic, meaning mainly it's not about meeting our own expectations or desires of wanting people to be a certain way, or even ourselves to be a certain way, but it has enough breadth or limitless understanding that is rooted in wisdom. And the wisdom aspect is exactly that quality of equanimity, which is the fourth of the Brahma Viharas, the divine abodes, or the qualities of beautiful heart and mind qualities that I just mentioned earlier, right? Loving kindness being the first, and then compassion being the metta turned towards pain, sorrow, grief, and the third being the happiness that manifests in relationship to other beings' happiness, which counteracts the forces of envy, usually, or jealousy. And therefore, the fourth is really that balancing act. So we cultivate loving kindness as a gentle invitation to soften our hearts, to connect deeper and clearer with all of life. And then we try to live from that space where we deeply undertake the interest, the intention to live a life where we are not going to try to create conflict, but right the opposite as best we can, of course, regarding all beings, but also all circumstances of life or life events. So the wish is to live in connection. And the way that the Buddha talked about this metta is also a very great protection. You know, many people say, but if I'm opening my heart in a way that, you know, is boundless, often the question comes up, where is my self-defense, you know? Where is the limit here? And it's quite amazing that, in a way, there's love happening in relationship to the wisdom that we've been cultivating. So that it's a softening of the heart, but it's also a strengthening of the heart. So that we have a clear sense of relationship. And in that way, there's an understanding that metta is a protection. And in fact, the first time it was taught by the Buddha, it was taught as a protection against fear. And it said that loving kindness is the antidote to fear. And I've been very fond of this practice, knowing that fear was one of my main difficulties, and therefore have really tested, you can say, or practiced this specific quality from morning to evening for many, many days. And it has hugely contributed to the difference that I spoke about the other night, last night, in relationship to having a sense of greater tolerance, a greater sense of strength, and yet spaciousness. So this is really the practice at work, because metta can embrace then all the difficulties as well, the ones we meet, right? We hold ourselves in relationship. It's not an abstract quality that we practice with, but we, as we did it, in a way that we also embrace what is difficult with metta. So, equanimity. It's called upekkha in Pali, and that literally means balance. It's a state of being able to stay in the middle. It's as simple as that. And it's totally rooted in wisdom. This quality of equanimity manifests, as I said, the fourth of these sublime abodes. It is present as a factor of awakening, which means that it's one of the qualities, main qualities that the Buddha embodied when he was awakened, but it's also a quality that we cultivate and develop and deepen as we practice our vipassana practice as a factor of awakening, along with concentration, mindfulness, and other qualities of heart and mind. And so the Buddha said that the equanimity factor is completely supported by the wholesome. By the wholesome, the healthy. What's wholesome in Hebrew? Does someone know? Wholesome? Can you tell that lady? Turn around. Give her the translation, please. This lady here.
There is no word for that.
Oh, really? Okay. So, you know what? Healthy.
Usually it's translated kimoi.
Okay, anyway, it means healthy. Okay? So when there's equanimity, we're able to stay open to what life is offering us. And exactly the opposite of what Charles mentioned, you know, where when there are beggars out in the street, and some of us at times may be in denial, right? Not want to look. That's exactly the opposite state of being. It's based in balance and a way that the mind is settled and can take in life with whatever it presents itself. So it's kind of resting in the middle of things. It said equanimity is the ability to rest in the middle of things. It's not easily unsettled. Okay? So when we practice metta or loving kindness, there's a real training, you know, like every other practice. Equanimity also, we can train and practice in that, and we did that all week. Our minds radiate towards the beautiful, the wholesome. And we open ourselves beyond the limits that we know and beyond the habits, just like we did, right? We progressively chose situations, people we know, people that, you know, we have a connection with, just to already connect, and then express that generosity beyond the habit, right? The habitual mind, which means to those we don't know and ultimately to all beings. Okay, so it's a manifestation of a quality of care, concern, in a very simple way. I mean, it really is quite basic, right? May you be happy, may you be in peace. If it's compassion, the phrase is, may you be free from suffering. Okay, it's the very basic sense of goodwill which manifests in different forms. Now, the equanimity practice here and has a real role. It is the equanimity that is allowing us to be impartial. Okay, that's another word we need a translation for. Great, thank you. Not take sides. Yeah, impartial. Yes. So this is a little bit moving beyond our way of behaving, at least some of the time, right? Of liking, disliking. And so it's the equanimity that allows us to move away from our preferences. You know, those we like, those we don't like. And so even when we practice metta, there is that quality of wisdom which is present and gives that sense of spaciousness, understanding that progressively the generosity of heart or the metta can manifest and express itself beyond the known. That's how it comes altruistic in a way. So metta is then infused with that equanimity, which is enabling that we embrace all conditions of life. An amazing quality, which we have trained in and certainly have a touch for. There's a little story which was told to me not long ago by a student, and I thought it was appropriate to just tell it to you tonight. He said every time one would ask a Zen master how he felt, he would respond, always okay. They said that, is that right? And he said, I'm well. Always. And that really annoyed the student. He says, but master, how'd you do it to feel always well? And the student said, oh, that's because you're the master. And the master didn't reply. He stayed silent. And he says, are you never having bad days? And the master replied, of course I have bad days. When there is a bad day, I'm well. And what happens when there's a good day? Well, when there's a good day, I'm well. That's a very nice example of the quality of equanimity, of resting with things as they are. Now, this attitude is not an easy one, yet we can count on that presence of balance with what the circumstances have to bring us, right? In relationship to change, in relationship to the different rhythms of life. There's going to be always ups and downs, right? Valleys and peaks, as we say in English. And this is what we're learning about. The flow of life is changing constantly. So we introduce the practice of metta. We call forth our deepest yearning or aspiration, our deepest wish for ourselves and other beings to be well, to be happy. And that's very virtuous. It's noble to wish that for all beings in relationship to life. It's the same for compassion. We wish to the deepest, holding the deepest intention that we may not suffer, that our dear ones don't suffer. And yet, we know life has something to offer, which is not always in relationship to what we deeply wish for ourselves and others. So this is the truth, right, of life, of what life brings us. And so we're not always obtaining the level of security that we'd like in life, whatever that security may mean to us. You know, we're not able to offer to another everything that they wish for, right? And we're not always able to act on the events of life that change. And so equanimity has this understanding. And I think it's really important that we understand that as much as we have offered the generous act of kindness that we have, right? And we may wish really the best for other beings. There's an understanding and a balancing act of wisdom in a way that says things are as they are. And the equanimity phrase is incredibly balancing in relationship to metta. And I feel it's really important that we understand the practice to its fullest extent. So the equanimity phrase says, all beings are the owners of their actions. Their happiness or unhappiness depend on their own actions and not upon my wishes for them. Do you want me to repeat that? Yeah? All beings are the owners of their actions. Their happiness or unhappiness depends upon their actions and not upon my wishes for them. That is the equanimity phrase. Said very abruptly or succinctly, you can say all beings have their journey, right? And it's very important to realize, and I think it's a real balancing act to understand that it's wise to not think that whomever you sent metta to during the week, right, you're going to have some responsibility for or some power over or, you know, something to do where there isn't an understanding of this is what I've wished for this person, yet they have their own path, they have their own journey, they're free. They have their own understanding and their life. Yeah, I think you got it, right? And so all of these Brahmaviharas, the metta, the compassion, and the empathetic joy, which is joy, are really open-hearted, right? They have an expression of generosity, which is boundless. And equanimity really comes as a balancing act, as much as I may wish for you to be happy, as much as I wish you were free from suffering. You have your own journey. Okay? So that's one thing that's said. And it really lifts the sense of weight of having, you know, to carry other beings' actions or take the responsibility, which enables then a sense probably of greater peace inside. And we have then that possibility of growing understanding, which teaches us to accept all of life as it is. And that's exactly what the equanimity quality implies, an openness to experience then life in all its riches. Ajahn Chah, the great Thai master, says this. He says, "The heart of the path is so simple. No need for long explanations. Give up clinging to attachment and hate. Just rest with the things as they are. That's all I do in my own practice." And in a way, that's all we could have said for you as an instruction, right? I remember my first instruction that I received from a teacher. I said, "I want to learn meditation." And he said, "Well, you just sit, you let be, you let go." And that was it for a week. It was amazing. I thought, wow, this is really short instruction. And yet, you know, I didn't have all these complicated. So, okay, I see what I see, and I let be, I let go. And so the practice often asks us to simplify, you know, exactly that mention that we constantly say of non-grasping is all that we need to do. And that means, non-grasping means, okay, be equanimous, right? Rest with things the way they are. Give up clinging, give up attachment. And so difficult it is. But that's exactly what we've been offering. This equanimity, in fact, is nothing else than progressively the lessening or the diminishment of reactivity. And that's what we can bring to our life. And in a way, what we call the attitude of noticing exactly where we're standing is what we can bring to our life. And it's quite helpful to understand that in our daily practice, it's possible, whether you're in relationship, whether you're talking to someone, whether you're doing some work or walking along, to have that attitude of just saying, am I resting with things the way they are? Is there reactivity or is there equanimity? That's all that there is, really, quite frankly. Wanting is present. Is it absent? Is there something that's missing? And asking ourselves, maybe, you know, what is it that is not here, is not present, that I so long for? So all of these qualities manifest in a way quite naturally. There's a release of reactivity. With all these four sublime abodes, there's a near opposite and a far opposite, which means you can say there's a near neighbor, a quality that looks like it but isn't really. And I said, right, with metta, that there's love with interest or love with attachment, right? And that's the near quality, but it's not altruistic, so it has some sense of wanting back or really reflecting something that has some self-interest. So that's the near one. And the far one is ill will. We can't confuse ill will, right? And so metta is non-ill will. And then with equanimity, I won't go into the two others, but equanimity, the far opposite is reactivity. That's exactly it. It's to fall constantly into attachment and aversion, attachment and aversion, attachment and aversion, right? That's the far opposite. The near neighbor of equanimity, interestingly, is indifference. And that is so interesting. You don't know that word? Huh. Indifference, you know, and so that's why, you know, we talk about equanimity and we think, okay, there's dispassion here, right? We're not linked or involved in life. There isn't that connection with life, and it's completely wrong. With equanimity, it's not that we withdraw or that, you know, we're completely passive. That's indifference. There's a carelessness, a sense of, I don't care, you know, and often that's exactly how we're living, you know, there's kind of, we're maybe in denial when indifference is present. Equanimity doesn't have anything of carelessness or indifference or any withdrawing which refuses life, which is not involved in way. So it takes action. It doesn't mean that we're not completely connecting to life. What the quality is, it's not indifference, it's acceptance. And that quality of acceptance means that, you know, this is something that we're working with, and we probably have met or not met, you know, again, reactivity, non-acceptance, and when there's just absence of reactivity, there's acceptance. There's the possibility of meeting what is, which is resting with things as they are. So here again, you know, it's not meant to be understood that we need to be perfect, right? This is a work in progress. It doesn't mean that you need to be perfect in any way. There's an understanding that these qualities manifest, they deepen, they are encouraged when there's a sense of awareness, clear seeing, and we just do the best we can. And in the way that, what does it mean, doing the best we can? It means just that we care of how we are with life in this world, and just try to be kind and compassionate. And of course, wisdom helps us in that way, you know. Sometimes we don't know how we can help. And sometimes we even go wrong. And that's also to be equanimous in relationship to that, you know, to really be having that tolerance and that quality of metta, which then induces equanimity, that they balance each other, that we may have already the kindness to say, okay, something here has gone wrong, and this is totally okay. I'd like to share a little story about at the time of the Buddha, in one of the discourses, there was a disciple who was a wealthy merchant. His name was Anattapindika, and he was the one who offered this huge, if you read the suttas, Jeta Grove, and you know, it's a huge park, and he really was a big sponsor for the Buddha and many, many monks for many days. And he was kind of present for all the charities and constantly being generous and offering great sums of money. You know, one would have liked to have Anattapindika in one sangha, making things easy. And he had said that this merchant had a relative whom was probably his nephew, I think, and his relative said that he wanted to start a business. So he asked the uncle, I think it's the uncle, maybe the cousin, whatever, for some money. And the merchant was very generous. He was giving money, but this man was in fact a gangster. And so he was spending his money quite unwisely. And so the rich merchant decided one day to stop giving. And the relative declined. He declined socially, he declined physically, he became very poor. And it was said that even at the end of his life, he didn't even have money to buy firewood to keep himself warm. And so he died quite miserably on the street. And so the rich merchant got to know this fact, and he felt quite miserable himself. And so he went to the Buddha, who naturally was his teacher, and he asked the Buddha if he should have done something else, something more, something better. And the Buddha's response is very simple. He simply said there was nothing more he could have done, and it was now the time for equanimity. And that's quite a nice example that equanimity really is also the practice of letting go, right? So we all have situations, you know, when he had a lot of metta, right, for a long time, and he gave and very generously. And at one point, that may have changed, yet it did not alleviate the fact that he had been generous. And now that this man was no longer alive, it was the time for equanimity. The wisdom was to be in balance, to have that capacity to accept the way things are, to not cling. And so this is exactly the beautiful example of metta and equanimity, because all things are insubstantial. And so there's no ideal here. It's really the path of wisdom, understanding with each and every situation where, you know, where we stand, where is the action that we can undertake. We help, we live, we help, as a great teacher said, we're here on this world to generously offer what we have, and we also are realistic. And the part that is realistic is the part of equanimity, that our capacity is also what we need to check. And so equanimity is less tempted to react for or against. It's that capacity to really be standing in the middle. And its characteristics is said that it arrests, it, you know the word arrest, to stop, right? The mind before it falls into extremes. And so what are the two extremes? Exactly that, attachment and aversion. Exactly that. The Dalai Lama says, you should always cultivate equanimity. But he said, with a big smile, I remember, cultivating equanimity is a work in progress. A work that will be trained and improved every day that you are alive. And he added, until when? Until you die. A never-ending task. And then another student said, but what about if you're enlightened? He said, well, then it's the manifestation. The expression of an enlightened being is to be in equanimity. Every moment. Naturally, there's no attachment, and it's that quality of impartiality. So it's said also that equanimity is a way that we are in life, and especially in daily life. It's said that there are eight worldly winds, or also called the eight vicissitudes of life. you can get it. Vicissitudes. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, I'm going to name them so they're going to be very clear. So what are they? They're gain and loss, right? Praise and blame. Pleasure and pain. Good and bad reputation. So there are eight of them, right? There are four pairs. Okay. And so it's quite extraordinary that with equanimity, we just see them arise and pass, letting them be, letting them go, right? Usually when there's wanting, we want so much, you know, gain, praise, pleasure, good reputation. We constantly wish for that. And we fear, right? We fear loss, blame, pain, and bad reputation. And so the equanimity in relationship to our daily life really works in relationship to these eight vicissitudes. You know, are we subject constantly to gain or to pleasure? And, you know, you can just see how we are. You know, there's a moment where we're just taking a walk and it's beautiful and there's shade and there was a breeze. And the next moment, the sun is hitting really strong and, you know, we're sweating and we're constantly moving. I can see when I'm doing the groups, you know, there's constantly this chair that I'm thinking about to not be in pain. And that's just a little example, but with the body, we constantly do this. So it's equanimity when we learn with vigorous aspects of life to increase our sense of openness of life. And in our practice, that's exactly what we cultivate. It's really moving in the sense of not reacting so much. And that's what the practice does, you know. More and more, there's a tolerance, you can say, which in relationship to what we like, what we dislike. Again, Achancha, and it's great because this is related to what I just said. He says, of course, there are dozens of meditation techniques, but it all comes down to this. Just let it all be. He said, step over here where it is cool, out of the battle. Why not give it a try? And so it's exactly that. We stop, or at least we diminish our sense of battling with life, with struggling. And it's exactly that we understand in relationship to maybe body pain or an emotional pain, that when we have a sense that we can open a little more, there's a certain level of surrender thanks to equanimity, there's the dropping away of the battle that Achancha is talking about, nothing else. I'd like to read a little story, which is a little funny, and yet has a lot of equanimity juice in it. It says, a young lady was waiting for her flight in the boarding room of a big airport. As she would need to wait many hours, she decided to buy a book to spend her time. She also bought a packet of cookies. She then sat down in an armchair in the VIP room of the airport to rest and read in peace. Beside the armchair where the packet of cookies lay, a man sat down in the next seat, opened his magazine, and started reading. When she took out the first cookie, the man took one also. She felt irritated, but said nothing. She just thought, what a nerve. If I was in the mood, I would punch him for daring. For each cookie she took, the man took one too. This was infuriating her, but she didn't want to cause a scene. When only one cookie remained, she thought, ah, what will this abusive man do now? Then the man taking the last cookie divided into half, giving her one half. "Ha, that was too much." She was much too angry now. In a huff, she took her book, her things, and stormed to the boarding place. When she sat down in her seat inside the plane, she looked into her purse to take her eyeglasses, and to her surprise, her packet of cookies was there, untouched, unopened. She felt so ashamed. She realized that she was wrong. She had forgotten that her cookies were kept in her purse. The man had divided his cookies with her without feeling angered or bitter. While she had been very angry, thinking that she was dividing her cookies with him, and now there was no chance to explain herself nor to apologize. Don't you think that man had equanimity? He surely did. And generosity too, right? So with mindfulness, with kindness, with wisdom, equanimity in a way has a place of choice, right? It appears as a result of not being so attached. And I think we're quite spacious in that, with that quality. This form of equanimity also in the text is compared, and I think people kind of understand it. It's compared to grandmotherly love. And I like that. Because the grandmother clearly loves her grandchildren, right? But thanks to her experience with life, right, she is less likely to be caught in the drama of her grandchildren than the mother is. There's a sense of coolness. And it's exactly that. There's love and there's spaciousness. And the example of a grandmother is quite beautiful. She's less tormented in her mind than the mother would be. Which doesn't mean that there isn't a lot of love and care. So, you know, we're practicing for liberation. The expression of that freedom grows in time. And that expression is just a greater sense of ease and of peace with life and in ourself. And so with practice, there's always a wonderful opportunity for compassion, for love, for wisdom, to manifest whatever the circumstances of life manifest. And that quality of equanimity is often the peace that we so long for. When we talk about peace, you know, you wonder what that means actually. And I think that we can reflect a little bit and call that peace equanimity in a way. As the Dalai Lama says, peace doesn't mean an absence of difficulty. Peace means solving the difficulties through peaceful means. Do you want me to repeat that? Peace doesn't mean an absence of difficulty. Peace means solving the difficulties through peaceful means. And that's exactly what equanimity does. So I'll end with a poem again, and it's called The Mind of Absolute Trust. The great way has no difficulties. Just avoid picking and choosing. When attachment and hate are both absent, everything becomes clear and undisguised. Yet make the smallest distinction. Heaven and earth are set infinitely apart. If you wish to see the truth, then hold no opinions for or against anything. To set up what you like against what you dislike is the disease of the mind. When the deep meanings of things is not understood, the mind's essential peace is disturbed to no avail. That's from the third Zen Patriarch. Okay, we'll sit just 1 or 2 minutes. Thank you for listening.